You're listening to a podcast by Martin Scott. Thanks for joining me today. Our subject, eschatology. Books, speculation, time charts, definite predictions, escape routes. What a minefield. How do we respond? I hope we can discover a healthy framework to shape our perspectives. Sit back, listen, be provoked, and enjoy. So let's get on with today's topic. Thanks to all of you who have emailed or communicated your appreciation of these podcasts. I hope you're all finding them useful, and of course, there's no pressure to agree. Let me reiterate that I'm not looking to come up with final solutions, but simply wish to present material that will both critique some of what's become popular, as well as help to present a few guidelines. I was asked about the emphasis, which obviously I'm covering in this current series on dispensationalism, asked about the emphasis on the rapture, why I was spending the amount of time on it that I am. And the reason for doing this is not simply the widespread belief in the rapture, but it's also the influence that this type of eschatology has had, even on those who don't believe in the rapture. Dispensationalist type of thinking has influenced other theologies. So, for example, I picked up recently on a non-dispensationalist set of teachings, but teachings on the rapture, where they believed in the church being caught up to meet the Lord in the air, and they had a belief in both a future heavenly and an earthly Jerusalem coexisting at the same time. That's dispensationalism with a twist. Now, of course, someone might decide that is also biblical. Now, not everyone believes in a rapture, but the popularity of the Left Behind series shows how the effect this approach to Scripture has had, simply because end-time scenarios are fascinating. We will go on to critique dispensationalism in detail, but I want to make a few comments at this stage, and some of this will be rehearsing what we've covered thus far. Let me add to it, though, jumping forward, that we will look at their approach to Scripture. The appeal is that they want to take the Bible literally. That, of course, is both naive, and when we discover what they have to say themselves, we'll find that they are inconsistent with regard to that approach. A little recap. Irving and Darby are at the roots, but the influence of D.L. Moody is very significant, and he, of course, is a very influential North American revivalist. The publication of the Scofield Bible, and there are also offshoots of that, such as the Charles Ryrie Study Bible, where the way to interpret Scripture is placed within the very pages of the Bible themselves, that is a very powerful tool. The reaction to liberalism, seen, for example, in the publication of the 12-volume paperback series, The Fundamentals, turn of the century, 1910 to 15, those were influenced greatly by dispensational teachers. So dispensationalism has a big foothold into the fundamentalist camp. Pentecostalism, likewise, borrowed its eschatology pretty much straight from dispensationalism. And even great parts of the charismatic movement has done so, or at least been influenced by the type of understanding of the Bible that dispensationalism uses. Let me also make a little jump ahead to look at the danger of interpreting the Bible through current events. That's a trend that we will find over and over again. Let me ask, is the Bible in these situations being looked at and studied in its own right, particularly with a weighting given to its original context, original writers and hearers, or is it that the current scenario of in the world scene shapes our understanding of the Bible, and really the Bible has to line up with it? Sometimes that's called newspaper exegesis. I'll give you an example. Charisma Magazine, North American publication that probably is the most influential magazine amongst charismatic Pentecostal people, published an article in April 1991. It's called The Gulf War and Beyond. Respected church leaders address questions about war, peace, prophecy, and the Middle East. One leader interviewed in this article said this: Isaiah 21 speaks of the fall of Babylon. Verse 1 mentions a strong storm from the desert. Then the person quotes that verse in the Amplified Version. As whirlwinds in the south, the Negev, sweep through, so it, brackets the judgment of God by hostile armies, comes from the desert. The person interviewed said, this could be Operation Desert Storm. Now, for those that remember the war, there was a move called Operation Desert Storm, and that was the name given to the U.S. land and air operation during that time. Now, one might think that sounds quite reasonable. There are some remarkable parallels between Isaiah 21 and the Gulf War. But we have to ask a more radical question. Is that what Isaiah had in mind? And when we do that, I think we'll discover that the parallels are simply coincidental. We must allow the Bible to speak in its own culture, its own time, and not try to force some remarkable parallels and try to make them fit and say the Bible is prophesying what we are reading about. Give you another example. Why should the terrors of Revelation always be just ahead, always around the corner? Why shouldn't they be past? Talks in Revelation about a third of humanity being killed. Why could that not refer rather to the bubonic plague that killed a third of the population of Europe? Why not that way around? I think perhaps you are understanding where I'm going on that. People want to think they are living at a certain time in history and the Bible gives us inside information as to what is happening. For me, it is the frightening influence, and the effect has often been fear, not faith, that has been released, but it's the frightening influence of this type of teaching that motivates me to take the time over this issue. So let's go back to pick up where we left off in the last podcast. I talked about Scofield's seven dispensations. That's a characteristic of dispensationalism. There are seven periods of time, seven epochs in which God is at work in human history. And although there are differences in the seven dispensations, and even in Scofield's original work of 1917 and the revised one of 1984, there are differences, the underlying shape remains the same. And I gave you the list from 1984. There is an era of innocence related to the Garden of Eden. Secondly, an era of the conscience or moral responsibility, followed by an era of human government, which gave way to the time of promise for Abraham, Genesis 12 onwards. This then gave way to the time of the law and Israel. Number six is the church age, and we're going to have to come back to this and explain the significance of putting it in that way. And it finally gives way to the kingdom age, which is the age of the millennium. To say that these are divisions imposed on Scripture, I think is clear. The clear division in Scripture is between the law and the prophets and the gospel. That's what Christ himself said. Matthew 11:13, we read, all the prophets and the law prophesied up until John. But in the Scofield Bible, amazingly, Jesus is ministering under the dispensation of the law. So the Gospels are for the Jew, according to the dispensationalists. So, for example, the Lord's Prayer and the phrase, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us, is not applicable to the church as it's based on legal ground. We're living under grace. The letters, then, are for the church age, and the age of grace will end with the apostasy, the falling away of the church. When the church age ends in failure and apostasy, it's going to be replaced by a revived national Israel who will enjoy the blessings of the final kingdom dispensation. And amazingly, even in the Scofield Bible, in making such a strong division between Israel and the church, he can insist that Israel is the wife of Yahweh, while the church is the bride of Christ. You can read that in Scofield Footnote 1, page 922. the end of the church era, end of the dispensation of grace, there'll be an apostasy of the church with the confusion of a false unity, and normally they see it based around the papacy, based around the Roman Catholic setup. The Babylon of Revelation then takes two forms, an ecclesial Babylon and a political Babylon, with the latter eventually destroying the former. Political Babylon, the political world power, eventually destroying the religious false unity. There are some obvious contradictions to Scripture in the system as it is developed, perhaps seen very clearly in the false dispensational structure that they've placed upon Scripture. But this work that was developed through Schofield has paved the way for those who would follow, and writers such as Hal Lindsey in the more recent era has been one of the very prolific teachers of this type of system. It is to Hal Lindsey that we're going to turn in our next podcast. So until then, you've been listening to a podcast from Martin Scott. Check out the website at www.threegenerations.eu. I look forward to talking to you again in the near future.